The Veritas Radio Network and the Crusade Channel present Kurt Wallace's The Flow. Real interviews with real people revealing real truths. Heard exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade Channel and available online at veritasradionetwork.com. Radio, the way it should be.
Presented by Veritas Radio Network, I'm Kurt Wallace, and this is The Flow. Our guest today is Johnny Rockin, minarchist, music artist, and host of the widely popular radio show, Johnny Rocket Launchpad. He sits down with me to discuss his life growing up outside of Chicago with diametrically different parents, a creative mom who performed with many great singers, such as James Brown, and his father, a voice of reason, he describes as his rock, and how they influenced his unique critical perspective. He talks about his experience in the demilitarized zone of Korea while serving in the Army as a helicopter pilot. He provides thoughtful consideration of the benefits of minarchism, citing the closest historic example in federalism. He then shares experiencing flow when performing on stage with his band, the Hot Rodding Romeos. He also explains why he calls his show a happy accident. This is an interview you won't hear anywhere else. And Johnny Rocket, thanks for being with us on The Flow.
Hey, thank you very much, man. I appreciate it.
So let's get to know you. You have a lot of interesting aspects to your experience here on this rock. Let's start from the beginning. Where'd you grow up?
Oh, man. in the suburbs outside of Chicago.
Uh-huh.
So I lived all over the northwest suburbs off of Chicago. So the rich middle class, rich to middle class areas. I didn't live in the city of Chicago ever, mm-hmm. but I just kind of claim that I'm from Chicago with the map thing. You know, because if you have to go, well, I'm 20 miles west of Chicago, people, you start losing people. So I just say I'm from Chicago. It's like a 20-minute drive. So okay, whatever, but. Yeah, I lived out there in the Midwest, and I really liked it. So it was a great, you know, I grew up in a normal house, mm-hmm. normal household.
Big family, well, small family?
Kind of a, well, my mom was an interesting character in my life. I mean, she was a musician her entire life. She's worked with people like James Brown, Tina Turner, Jerry Lee Lewis. Whoa. She was an entertainer her entire life. So she was just a really cool influence on me. And yet my dad was this kind of guy who was very technical and very logical. And he liked to work on math problems and computer problems and loved science. And I had this really crazy relationship regarding them. Uh-huh. You know, one was very, you know, left side of the brain. One was very right side of the brain. So I had this good combination of balance, I think, between the left and right side of the brain growing up. You know, I had a lot of creativity from my mom's side, and then I had a lot of logic and learning from my dad. So I thought it was really cool, and I had a really great – I mean, I was a happy kid. I didn't have any problems. Generally, my mom was kind of a gypsy. She moved around a lot, but, I mean, we had a lot of time together, and it was fun. I mean, I even had time in the circus. I mean, when I was a – I don't know, 13 years old, 14 years old,
really?
Took my entire summer vacation, and I was on the circus, on the road
what
with my mom.
What were you doing?
She worked at the circus.
Okay.
Crazy life. So I can't say it's normal. Mm-hmm. I could just say it was happy. Happy childhood.
That's interesting. So there was a lot of experiential learning in that. Things that you wouldn't get from being put into a... You know, one box, moving from one box to another, as we do in public education. You got to see the world in a different way, different type of.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I knew that people from Maine were really nice and people from New Jersey were not so nice. Even at a young age, I'm watching my language. But, yeah, you know, it was funny because I took these things in. Like I was traveling. You know, every summer, me and my mom would go out and do crazy stuff. She would be like, you know what? I don't care about stuff. Let's spend our money on experiences. And so we'd go out and just do crazy stuff. And, you know, my dad thought my mom was nuts. Obviously, they divorced. But, I mean, there was a good balance between those two because both of them have been my heroes in my life. And it's just kind of a weird, weird childhood. But I can honestly say it was happy.
That's so,
and I wouldn't change it for the world.
Number one moment with your mom.
Oh, man. That's a tough one. I don't know. I used to always like music. And one thing that my mom was really good at is she always took the time to listen. Like, hey, Mom, I got this great song I'm working on. Or I did a performance for, like, Elvis or, you know, the Beatles or whatever music I liked. And she would sit there and give me the time to watch me perform. I've kind of always been an entertainer. Mm-hmm. And she took the time to sit there, and she never really critiqued me. You know, maybe she should have. That sucks, you know. but she was really awesome. She was a great, great person. And she gave me that time to, you know, she actually gave me a lot of confidence in being an entertainer and being a person who talks to people in groups. And so I give a lot of credit to my mom for that. Really, I do. She was very supportive.
That's interesting that when you talk about that, she didn't give you any kind of criticism or critique. And a lot of times people grow up with that, and it's very influencing in terms of maybe even confining their ability to do the things that they really want to do, the things that inspire them. And then later in life, they end up doing those things. And I'm one of those people that in my family, I grew up in a weird environment, a weird family experience, but I don't know anybody who probably doesn't think that way on some level. And I just went out and did all kinds of things. Whatever I had in my mind, I just jump out and do it. But
right.
Your mom, it sounds like she just accepted you as you were, just let you be and didn't try to interfere with whatever process you were experiencing.
No, not at all. What's funny is, what's kind of cool, my mom was like the ultimate cool mom. So when I was like 15, 14 years old, I'd be like, Mom, I smoke. Mom, give me some smokes. And she'd be like, well, you know, you're going to do it. You're going to do it. I don't want you to do it behind my back. Don't lie to me. I'll buy you cigarettes. And I know some people might say that's a terrible mom.
Yeah.
But I was going to do it anyways. And at least she understood that. Mm. And she said that if I said don't do it, it would give you more. You know, there's a higher probability that you would do it. So if I kind of maybe helped you and learned from your own mistakes, you know, maybe you'll become a better person. Mm-hmm. So my mom is one of those cool moms. You know, I could smoke around her. She was cool. I mean, she was cool.
Yeah.
But she was right. I really feel that she was right in her decision making in a lot of ways. So, you know, when she put so much restriction, when you put restrictions on people, people tend to do the opposite.
Mm. Yeah. And also lose their ability to reason and make decisions and make mistakes and learn from those mistakes.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So
what about your dad? How top moment with your dad? I mean, diametrically opposed in terms of personality types.
Best moment with my dad. Wow. Well, I guess me and my dad would have these long intellectual discussions about ideas, whether it was about science or about space. He was really into astronomy. And, you know, we would sit there and talk about space and science and innovations and new technologies. And I was always been kind of a tech nerd from him. And he really, he was a great guy. I mean, he was the guy that I talked to when I needed a rock, you know? So I'm like, Dad, you know, I have this, what do I do? You know, he always had answers. So I think our conversations is what is the most, you know, he passed, about 7 years ago or no, I'm sorry, about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I think our conversations is the thing that I miss the most with my dad. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, having him as a guidance counselor. 'Cause you know, I've made some terrible decisions, and you know, no thanks to my mom. No, I love my mom, but like my dad, you know, if my mom said, you could do that, my dad would say, no, you can't. So I had this really crazy back and forth, like this weird ebb and flow going between my mom and dad. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why the reason, like, you know, the kind of person that I am now is based on how I was raised and how I view the world.
It's so interesting to me because you're talking about two really incredible type of experiences with two very different human beings and the benefits from both of those. And when I think about the world and how we interact and who people are and what they, you know, everyone's a three-dimensional human being. And I don't know why I'm saying this, but I venture to say that there's probably something worthwhile in a real genuine experience of having a conversation with somebody like Hillary Clinton.
Maybe it's, sure. Oh, absolutely.
You know? But that's, you know, it's the reality is that at the end of the day, you strip away the titles and and all of those aspects of a person and get down to the real nitty gritty. And we all experience things that have some sort of value and benefit. If you can get past the ego part of it. Yeah. That's a
dangerous thing. Oh, yeah. The ego is dangerous.
My ego is not my amigo. So
but it can be dangerous. I mean, I think the ego drives people. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's kind of a motivational tool. I look at the ego as a motivational tool. I have this reputation to uphold, or I have this to uphold. That is the ego. You know, I can't let, I let myself down before anyone else. You know, like if I don't like something I've done, or if I create something that isn't to my standard, mm-hmm. that drives me, you know? Yeah. So you're talking about the ego. Ego is very dangerous because you can get in trouble with a strong ego. And I do, I think about me. I'm a very self-absorbed guy. Uh-huh. And I wish I wouldn't be as much. Sometimes I wish I would think more about other people and be more benevolent towards others. But sometimes I get in the trap where I keep thinking internally instead of externally.
Yeah, it's, you know, but that in that though, there is a value in I don't know why I said that, but that there is a value in terms of not taking on somebody else's garbage or not sitting and, you know, getting into the pig pen with somebody else who's wallowing in their own mess. So in a way, it almost sounds like, you know, when you talk about being a rock, everybody is like that. I'm like that. I'm self-absorbed, but I also realize that I'm not responsible for other people and they're not responsible for me as well. And I kind of see that as being an asset.
Yeah. I mean, I think there is some value in that. Mm-hmm. I mean, but at the same time, you know, forgetting birthdays and, sure. I'm terrible at that stuff because I'm thinking about what I got to do the next day and I get in the zone where I can't, I'm not thinking about everyone else. I'm thinking about what do I have to do? What do I have to do? What do I have to do? Hmm. And, you know, maybe I think the bad side is you can miss an opportunity to take in the world and experience the world. And sometimes I get so focused in on things where you can lose that sight. You know what I mean? Like where I'm thinking about X, Y, and Z, and all these beautiful things are going by me every day. And sometimes I just don't, I guess, you know, the term stop and smell the roses. I think sometimes it's healthy to do that and just let the other the things in your mind go and let it go, at least for a weekend at least, you know. Oh. But I think it's important, though. But I think that's what drives us. I think that's what drives us as human beings is where do I want to go? This is what I want to do. And when you get so focused, I think, you know, it's easy to, you know, to lose the beauty of the world itself.
Okay, so speaking of being driven, something really interesting, I've never spoken to someone who is a former, or I don't know if you'd call yourself former, I don't know how this works, but an Army helicopter pilot. How does somebody become an Army helicopter pilot? I, you know, when I first learned about you, I didn't realize that you were in the Army even. So what's that experience?
It's a disguise. I was in the Army for 10 years and I was, wow. I started from private. I came in right out of high school, mm-hmm. had like $2 in my pocket. I didn't even have money for smokes. And it was bad. I was living in my car. It was just a really bad life. Having trouble finding work.
Yeah.
And so I said, hey, I'm just going to join the Army. And on a whim, one day I just up and left and joined the military.
Whoa.
And I did really well. I was doing really well. I got promoted super fast. And from there, I figured, you know, I hit a point in the military where I couldn't get promoted any further, or at least not for a while. And so I thought to myself, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and see what about this warrant officer program. So I submitted a whole bunch of paperwork and I had to take a flight aptitude test and I had to take a extensive physical and I had to do all these tests and you name it. I was out there for 3 months doing all these tests for becoming a pilot and finally got accepted and became a pilot and was flying helicopters in the Army and was in Fort Lewis, Washington, where I live now, not too far away from the base. I was in Fort Polk. I mean, I was all over the place. But it was a great experience, and I think the military, in certain ways, gave me a lot of discipline to kind of control my own life.
Mm. Yeah.
But it was a great experience. I mean, it's cool to understand, you know, aerodynamics and how the aircraft works and actually learning how to fly. It was fun. It was great. But again, the government can mess up a wet dream. And so that being said, you know, like they could take the fun out of everything. So to do like an hour ride or an hour flight, I mean, you had to do 5 hours worth of paperwork. So, you know what? Nah. By the time you were actually flying, you're like, I'm ready to go home. I'm tired. I just did all this paperwork. So
that's,
you had
crazy.
All these. Yeah, whatever.
Does it cover your arse kind of thing? Is that,
yeah.
Is that, I mean,
yeah,
it's like a
weather and a flight plan and do all this stuff and walk around and make sure your gear was up to date. A lot of it was in the name of safety, you know, so, and I get that. That's great. But again, I think it could have been streamlined to be a lot more efficient.
A lot of regulation within the Army system.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've heard
a lot
heard
of fraud, just, waste, and abuse.
Yeah, it's bogged down with all of that. I've heard this terrible sort of aspect of all the services, military services. Yeah. Did you see action, or were you?
No, not as a pilot.
Uh-huh.
My first duty assignment, I was in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, as a private, and my first duty assignment was Korea, and I was with. God, I can't remember the artillery unit, but I actually there was a little bit more threat where I was at in Korea. I was right on the DMZ, and there's stuff going on there all the time.
Yeah,
in Korea, and no one knows about it.
Can you talk about that? I had a roommate that told me a lot of stories about that they would kind of take shots at each other.
That still happens. It's just. I'm trying to watch my mouth because I usually tell the story in a different way.
Uh-huh.
I guess that, you know, they just want to show how, you know, each side's trying to show us how much their strength is, show of force. That's the word I'm looking for.
Right.
A show of force. And so, you know, one side would threaten the other side. So I remember this mission that we were on, and I was, 21? And, you know, we had this aircraft. I don't want to get into it too much, but they said, if you guys fly your helicopter over our area, North Korea is telling the United States and South Korea this, we're going to shoot you down. So there we were going. And of course, our side said, well, we're going to fly the aircraft the same pattern it always flies. We're not going to deviate our course. Well, what ended up happening was, is we were on the south side getting packed and loaded with ammunition, and we were using live rounds, and we were like, we could die right now because we're just a bump for the North Korean forces if they did decide to attack. So we had, it was a lot of pucker factor knowing, here we go. We could be in the blank right now.
Right.
So it was crazy. It was a crazy experience, man.
It's just so weird. And you talk about ego and flexing, and we have borders, and we have all of these, you know, the world is just so crazy the way that
it is,
that it's set up, and people are pinned against each other in governments, and it's just weird to think about.
Don't even get me started on government.
You can start on government. So you're a minarchist. I've never had a minarchist on the show. So what is that? What is a minarchist?
Well, you know what? I think here's the thing. Like, a lot of libertarians consider themselves minarchists, but I don't think they really are. I think they're just mushy mods. We call them the mushy moderates.
Okay.
I think they, you know, we want to smoke pot, and yeah, sure, government could be smaller, but you know, we want to be able to do what we want to do. And I'm like, no, I think we should have government down to the size where the government's job is to protect the individual's life, liberty, and property. That is all. That is all. So I believe in courts, cops, and military. That is all. I am not for bureaucracies. I am not for all this other made-up government programs, government spending, none of this. I'm all for free markets. I'm all for expanding the message of liberty. And if there's a free market solution to any problem, I think we should take that instead of any government-related so-called solution. Mm-hmm. So I am very adamant about getting the government and pushing the government back as far as possible to where it's almost non-existent. And it doesn't have the power that it does. But I think that the government, coming from a minarchist position, when it comes to dealings with human behavior and human ego and human selfishness, that there could be people who do bad things. There's going to be people who rob. And I don't believe a private force or a private agency could do that. I believe that that is where a limited government to protect an individual's life, liberty, and property would come in. And I think by having some government, that government can protect the people and be non-coercive and be there to protect the individual and not take away their liberty. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the difference. I think in theory, I myself and a lot of anarcho-capitalists believe that. And I think it's a great philosophy. I really do. And I really love, I love the beauty behind anarcho-capitalism, but I just don't think it could be achieved. From a logical standpoint, I think and if there was no government, I always think that there always would be one that would try to fill. It would try to fill in, or some sort of entity would try to fill that void.
There's definitely a utopian sort of aspect to it. That there's not. It's not a reality because human nature, how things kind of work, is people want to try to assert control, and that's just, you're not going to be able to avoid power-hungry individuals who want,
right,
yeah, and
right,
and need that for whatever reason and motivation that comes into their silly little minds.
Absolutely.
We're going to have to take a short break. You're listening to The Flow with Kurt Wallace, our special guest, Johnny Rocket.